Chapter 9.
"What's this?" asked Commodore Tommy Thompson. "He says he's got a proposition for you."
Tommy's bouncers, two broken-nosed fighters who had murdered his numerous rivals over the years, were standing close on either side of a refined gentleman they had escorted into his backroom office. In cold silence, Tommy Thompson sized up what appeared to be a genuine Fifth Avenue swell. He was a medium-built man about his own age, 30. Medium height, expensive gold-headed cane, expensive long black coat with a velvet collar, costly fur hat, kid gloves. Heat was pouring from the coal stove, and the man quietly removed his gloves, revealing a heavy ring studded with jewels, and unbuttoned his coat. Under his coat, the Gopher Gang leader could see a solid gold watch chain thick enough to hold a brewery horse and a dark blue broadcloth suit of clothes. Tommy could have entertained three chorus girls for a week in Atlantic City for what the swell had paid for his boots. The swell said not a word. He stood utterly still after removing his gloves and opening his coat, except for when he lifted a hand to smooth the tip of his narrow mustache with his thumb, which he then hooked in his vest pocket. A cool customer, Commodore Tommy decided. He also decided that if all the cops in New York chipped in, they still could not afford to disguise a detective in such an outfit. Even if they could raise the dough, there wasn't a cop in the city who could paint that born with a silver spoon in his mouth expression on his mug. So the gang boss asked,
"What do you want?" "Can I assume," the swell asked, "that you are indeed the leader of the Gopher Gang?"
Commodore Tommy grew wary again. The swell was not a complete stranger to Hell's Kitchen. He had pronounced the gang's name correctly, as Gopher, not like the newspapers spelled it for Fifth Avenue readers. Where had he learned to say Gopher?
"I asked you, what do you want?"
"I want to pay you $5,000 for the services of three murderers." Tommy Thompson sat up straight. $5,000 was a hell of a lot of money. So much money that he forgot all about Gopher and Gopher and threw caution to the winds.
"Who do you want murdered?"
"A Scotsman named Alistair MacDonald needs killing in Camden, New Jersey. The murderers must be adept with knives."
"Oh, must they now?"
"I have the money with me," said the swell. "I will pay you first, and trust you will deliver." Tommy Thompson turned to his bouncers. The bruisers were grinning mirthlessly. The swell had just made a fatal mistake in admitting he had the dough on him.
"Take his $5,000, Tommy ordered. "Take his watch, take his ring. Take his gold-headed cane and his coat and his fur hat and his suit and his boots and throw the son of a bitch in the river."
They moved as one, surprisingly fast for big men. The swell's coat and tailored suit concealed a powerful frame. The stillness of his stance masked blinding speed. In the space of a heartbeat, one bouncer was sprawled on the floor, stunned and bloodied. The other was pleading for mercy in a high-pitched squeal. The swell had clamped his head under one arm while he pressed his thumb to the bouncer's eye. Commodore Tommy gaped in astonished recognition. Fitted over the swell's thumbnail gleamed a razor-sharp gouge. The tip pressed the corner of the bouncer's eye, and it was clear to the pleading gangster and to Commodore Tommy that with a flick of his thumb the swell could scoop the man's eye out of his head like a grape.
"Jesus, Jesus, Jesus," breathed Tommy. "You're Brian O'Shea."
At the sound of that name, the bouncer, whose eye was a fraction of an inch from being extracted from its socket, began to weep. The other, still struggling for breath on the floor, gasped,
"Can't be. Eyes O'Shea's dead."
"If he was," said Commodore Tommy, "he's back from it." The Gopher Gang leader stared in wonder. Brian Eyes O'Shea had vanished 15 years ago. No wonder he knew Gopher. If Eyes hadn't vanished, they'd still be battling each other to boss Hell's Kitchen. Barely out of childhood, O'Shea had mastered the gang weapons, slingshot, lead pipe, brass knuckles, and axe heads in his boots, and even gotten his mitts on a police revolver. But O'Shea had been most feared for gouging out rivals' eyes with a specially fitted copper thumbnail.
"You've moved up in the world," said Tommy, getting over his shock. "That gouge looks like it's pure silver."
"Stainless steel," said O'Shea. "Holds an edge and don't corrode."
"So you're back, and rich enough to pay people to do your killing for you."
"I won't offer twice."
"I'll take the job."
Eyes O'Shea moved quickly, raking the bouncer's cheek even as he released him. The man screamed. His hands flew to his face. He blinked, removed his hands, and stared at the blood. Then he blinked again and smiled with gratitude. Blood was streaming from a slice that traversed cheekbone to jaw, but his eyes were intact.
"Get up," Commodore Tommy ordered. "Both of you. Go get the Iceman. Tell him to bring Kelly and Butler."
They hurried out, leaving Tommy Thompson alone with O'Shea. Tommy said,
"This ought to put an end to the rumors that I killed you." "You could not on your best day, Tommy."
The Gopher Gang boss protested the insult and the contempt behind it.
"Why are you talking like that? We was partners."
"Sometimes." They stood in silence, old rivals taking each other's measure.
"Back," Tommy muttered. "Jesus Christ, from where?"
O'Shea did not answer. 5 minutes passed. 10. Kelly and Butler sidled into the Commodore's office, trailed by Iceman Weeks. Brian O'Shea looked them over.
Typical new breed gopher, he thought. Smaller, compact men.
And wasn't progress a wonderful thing? Tommy was a throwback to the old days when bulk and muscle ruled. Now clubs and lead pipe were giving way to firearms. Kelly, Butler, and Weeks were built more like himself, but dandified in the latest gangster fashion. Tight-fitting suits, bright vests, florid ties. Kelly and Butler wore polished yellow shoes with lavender socks. Weeks, the Iceman, stood out in hose of sky blue. He was the cool one who would hang back, let the hotheads take the chances, and then swoop in for the prize. In his dreams, the Commodore would die of something quick, and Iceman Weeks would own the gophers. O'Shea took 3 butterfly knives from his coat and handed one to each. They were German-made, exquisitely balanced, quick to open, and sharp as razors. Kelly, Butler, and Weeks hefted them admiringly.
"Leave them in the man when you do the job," O'Shea ordered with a glance at the Commodore, who seconded the order with a blunt threat. "If I ever sees yous with them again, I'll break your necks."
O'Shea opened a bulging wallet and removed 3 return tickets to Camden, New Jersey.
"MacDonald," he said, "we'll be hanging out in Del Rossi's dance hall soon after dark. You'll find it in the Gloucester district."
"What does he look like?" asked Weeks.
"Like an avalanche," said O'Shea. "You can't miss him."
"Get going," Commodore Tommy ordered. "Don't come back till he's dead."
"When do we get paid?" asked Weeks.
"When he's dead."
The killers headed for the railroad ferry. O'Shea pulled a thick envelope from his overcoat and counted 50 $100 bills on Tommy Thompson's wooden desk. Thompson counted it again and stuffed the money in his trousers.
"Pleasure doing business."
O'Shea said, "I'll have use for those tong hatchet men, too." Commodore Tommy stared hard.
"What tong hatchet men would you be wondering about, Brian O'Shea?"
"Those 2 highbinders from the Hip Sing."
"How in Christ's name did you know about them?"
"Don't let the fancy duds confuse you, Tommy. I'm still ahead of you, and always will be." O'Shea turned on his heel and stalked out of the saloon. Tommy Thompson snapped his fingers. A boy named Paddy the Rat appeared at a side door. He was thin and gray. On the street, he was almost as invisible as the vermin he was named for.
"Follow O'Shea. Find out where he hangs and what moniker he goes by.
Paddy the Rat followed O'Shea east across 39th. The man's fine coat and fur hat seemed to glow as he cut a path through the shabbily dressed poor who thronged the greasy cobblestones. He crossed 10th Avenue, crossed 9th, where he neatly sidestepped a drunk who lurched at him from the shadows of the elevated train tracks. Just past 7th, he stopped in front of an auto rental garage and peered in the plate glass window. Paddy crept close to a team of dray horses. Shielded by their bulk, stroking their bulging chests to keep them calm, he racked his brain. How could he follow O'Shea if he rented an automobile? O'Shea turned abruptly from the glass and hurried on. Paddy got uncomfortable as the neighborhood changed. New buildings were going up, tall offices and hotels. The Grand Metropolitan Opera House reared up like a palace. If the cops saw him, they would run him in for invading the Qualities neighborhood. O'Shea was nearing Broadway. Suddenly, he disappeared. Paddy the Rat broke into a desperate gallop. He could not return to Hell's Kitchen without reporting O'Shea's address. There. With a sigh of relief, he turned into an alley beside a theater under construction. At the end of the alley, he saw the tail of the long black coat twirl around a corner. He raced after it and skidded around that corner, straight into a fist that knocked him to the mud. O'Shea leaned over him. Paddy the Rat saw a glint of steel. A needle burst of pain exploded in his right eye. He knew instantly what O'Shea had done to him, and he cried out in despair. "Open your hand," said O'Shea. When he did not, the steel pricked his remaining eye. "You'll lose this one, too, if you don't open your hand." Paddy the Rat opened his hand. He quivered as he felt O'Shea press something round and terrible into his palm and close his fingers around it almost gently. "Give this to Tommy." O'Shea left the boy whimpering in the alley and retraced his steps to 39th Street. He stood in the shadows, still as a statue, until he was sure the little weasel didn't have a partner watching. Then he continued east under the 6th Avenue L, checked his back, walked to 5th Avenue, and turned downtown, still studying reflections in windows. A mustachioed Irish cop directing traffic shouted at a freight wagon to stop so the well-dressed gentleman could cross 34th Street. Doorman, whose blue and gold uniforms would have done an all-big-gun dreadnoughts captain proud, scrambled when they saw him coming. O'Shea returned their crisp salutes and marched into the Waldorf Astoria Hotel.